Hey, good morning. It's good to see you guys. It's actually not been too long since I was last here. I think, Dustin's maybe least favorite day of the year when the Niners lost the Super Bowl, which was awesome. I got to be in the living room with him as it happened. It was as good as you imagine. I promise you that. Oh, it was as good as you imagined. He was there when the infamous Tom Brady, Russell Wilson Super Bowl, the pick on the 1 yard line, and he watched me. I don't know what I did at that moment. I probably wanted to run through a wall. It was the worst. So to be there to return the favor, and whoever did that number on his office, that is like 12 years of retribution right there for me, okay? You don't understand. Just a couple life updates for you. We're in the absolute swing of some of the busiest parts of our lives. Nobody told me when I had kids that when you only have one kid in youth sports, it's like super easy. But that moment that you add your second kid into youth sports, you feel like you're always drowning. And it's a nightmare sometimes. And we have so much fun. But sometimes we just go through the sports seasons and we go, is this ever going to end? We've been to baseball 19 times this week, and that doesn't add up right. So Micaiah is playing T-ball. I get to be one of the assistant coaches for that. That's just herding cats, if you're wondering what little girls playing T-ball is like. It's not a lot of skill involved. There's not a lot of focus involved, but there's a lot of dance moves. There's a lot of flowers and grass being picked. And specifically on our team, there's a lot of WWE Royal Rumble going on as they tackle each other in the middle of the field. So it gets a little dicey out there. One of our players yesterday, I noticed that she's turned, this is the field, she's turned the completely wrong way. And walk over and said, hey, what's up? She goes, just working on my musical. Working on, what musical? I said, what song are you singing? She goes, making it up as I go. I was like, well, let's make it up and turn it around and watch the ball, because that last one almost got you square in the back of the head. So that's been a blast. Luke, he plays, it's his first year of kid pitch baseball, which is horrifying because he's one of the pitchers. And I didn't know that I didn't understand stress until I watched my son pitch a baseball. And let me tell you, it's not good for the heart rate. I most of the time stand there pacing back and forth, being like, please throw a strike. And then when he throws a strike, I get way too into it. And I'm like, let's go, you're the best pitcher ever. And then he walks a kid, and I'm like, we suck. There's a lot of ups and downs. But we did win yesterday, 9-8. We squeaked past this team, and it was, it sent me for a ride. Okay, it was pretty awesome. But hey, like I said, I'm just so happy to be here. As Dustin's video kind of said, and if you were here last week, Dustin dived into what it would look like to be a healthy church. And he actually didn't tell me I had to talk about that. But as I was kind of reading and listening, I did go on and listen to what he spoke about the parable of the sower and how the different seeds fall into different places and what the impact of that is. If they fall into good soil, how they grow and become healthy. If they fall into the thorns, they get choked out. You know, if you were here, you heard it. But I just love the conscious decision to look at ourselves as a community, ourselves as a church, and say, hey, where are the areas in our church, where are the areas in our lives personally, where are the areas that we're blind to right now that aren't able to grow as deep because we haven't put in deep roots? Or maybe there's things in this church, in my life for sure, in your personal lives, where are some things that could be impacting or choking out, so to speak, our faith? And I had originally planned on, before I ever listened to this, I had originally planned on talking through one of my favorite stories in the Bible, which is when Jesus walks on water, because, come on, it's pretty sweet, right? It's a cool thing. But then when I listened to Pastor Dustin's sermon, I immediately thought, I said, okay, that's still a good topic, that's still a good sermon matter, but where might be some roadblocks for us today then prevent us from actually deepening our faith. So if it's okay with you, I still want to kind of use that story as a launching pad. And I just want to dive right in. If you have a Bible, it's going to be Matthew chapter 14. You can look it up on your phone if you have that too. Otherwise, it's going to be on the screens behind us. But I'm just going to start reading Matthew chapter 14, verse 22. It says, immediately afterward, so this is Jesus had just finished teaching in that same sort of area of the parables that he was teaching. He said, immediately afterward, he compelled the disciples, get into the boat and go ahead of him to the other side. And he sent the crowds away. After he had sent them away, he went up on the mountain by himself to pray. And when it was evening, he was there alone. But the boat was already a long distance from land, battered by the waves, for the wind was contrary. And in the fourth watch of the night, he came to them walking on the sea. When the disciples saw him walking on the sea, they were terrified and said, "It's a ghost!" And they cried out in fear. But immediately Jesus spoke to them and said, "Take courage. It is I. Do not be afraid." Peter responded to him and said, "Lord, if it is you, command me to come out to you on the water." And Jesus said, "Come." Peter got out of the boat. He walked on the water and he came towards Jesus. But seeing the wind, he became frightened. And when he began to sink, he cried out, saying, "Lord, save me." And immediately Jesus reached out his hand and took a hold of him. And he said to him, "You of little faith, why did you doubt?" When they got into the boat, the wind stopped. And those who were in the boat worshiped him, saying, "You are truly God's son." Three quick things about this passage before we kind of really dive into what we're going to talk about tonight. Tonight. That's a bad start. If you're here till tonight, I'm doing something wrong. Three things, though. First one, in order to walk on water, you have to take the first step. If Peter doesn't get out of that boat, he doesn't walk on water. If Peter doesn't answer Jesus' call, he doesn't walk on water. Even if Peter decides he's going to get out of the boat before Jesus calls him, he doesn't walk on water. But the point is, if he doesn't get out of that boat ever, we don't have this incredible story of how Peter met Jesus on the water. In order to walk on water, you have to take the first step. Second quick thing about this, when you take your eyes off Jesus, that's when you start to sink. This passage is very clear here that it's only when Peter notices the wind and the water beneath his feet that that's when he begins to sink. It's very clear that it's when Peter takes his eyes off of Jesus, the person of Jesus, when Peter takes his gaze away from what he knows to be right and knows to be true and reverts back to trying to do it on his own, whether it's through fear or whatever, the minute he looks down away from Jesus, he starts to sink. It says, when he looked down at the waves churning beneath his feet, he lost his nerve and started to sink. I mean, yeah, he's on the water. It's terrifying. But when you take your eyes off Jesus, that's when you start to sink. And the third quick thought, when you are sinking, Jesus immediately reaches out and grabs a hold of you. Has anybody ever been told by another Christian that, you know, "Oh, God, don't worry. God doesn't give you anything you can't handle." Or, "Don't worry. God gives his greatest battles to his strongest warriors." And those are true things. But maybe it's time we start rephrasing those to sound like, "Hey, when you think you can't handle, God gives you a hand. Hey, it's okay. Even sometimes God's strongest warriors sink and they need a helping hand to be saved." But no matter what Peter did wrong in that moment, Jesus grabbed a hold of him and said, "I'm here. I'm safe. You're safe. And I got you." It's just such a cool passage of scripture, really. And it's an even cooler opportunity for Peter to have a chance to plant deeper roots in his faith with who Jesus was. And it's a cool opportunity for all of us as a church to plant deeper roots in who Jesus is by answering the call to get out of the boat and walk on the water of whatever it is Jesus calls in our lives. But here's the thing, we get stuck. Here's the thing we don't realize when we read that story. It takes an absolute journey to even step out of the boat, to take that first step towards Jesus. Peter, one of Jesus' absolute closest companions, had to take the step of faith. Why do we have such the hard time taking that same first step of faith? We get stuck. And I think there's a lot of reasons for that. But because, like I said, I don't want to keep you here till dinner, we're going to go through four. Four reasons that we get stuck not taking that first step out of the boat. First one's this, the fear of the unknown. The fear of the unknown. I hate the unknown. Dear, do I like the unknown? Not a fan. Big no-go. It stresses me out. I start to sweat. I get anxious. I don't know what the outcome's going to be. I start to pace a little bit. It's like me at the baseball game. All these other parents are like, that guy's crazy. Think about the disciples being called by Jesus and the fear of the unknown that came with that. One of my favorites to kind of theorize is Matthew, the tax collector. One of my favorite disciples to read about. In Luke chapter 5, it says this. It says, after he went out and looked at a tax collector named Levi, who's Matthew, sitting in a tax office, and he said to him, follow me. And then verse 28, it says, and he left everything behind, got up, and began to follow him. It's a pretty succinct version of what Matthew went through. But if we're going to theorize here for a minute, we got to think about who Matthew is and what this decision really meant for him. See, Matthew had money. Matthew had protection. Matthew had security. Granted, he wasn't the most well-received person. People didn't like tax collectors. If you saw a tax collector nearby, you ran the other way. You tried to hide the money that you didn't want them to know that you had. Okay? They weren't well-received people. But in Matthew's mind, even if he wasn't well-received, he knew that every day when he got home, he still had his money, he still had his protection, he still had his security. He didn't really care about the good or bad at that point. He knew regardless of what people thought of him, he got to go home and be a part of his comfortable lifestyle. He got to put on his new shoes every day. He got to wear whatever clothes he wanted. He got to sit in one room of the house in one morning, the other room of the house the other morning, because Matthew was taken care of. But when Jesus called Matthew, everything changed. You see, for Matthew to take that step towards Jesus, it's not just stepping out of the tax collector booth. It's not just saying yes to a call from a stranger, which it was. He had to step into a place that he'd never experienced. Matthew had to step out of his comfort, out of what he knew into the unknown. Matthew had to change everything about what his life would be to go and follow Jesus. To follow Jesus for Matthew meant to get rid of everything. To follow Jesus for Matthew meant no more comfort, no more guaranteed security, no more guaranteed that he was going to be behind that tax collector booth with a guard to protect him from all the people that didn't like him. None of that. It was all gone. And I imagine that Matthew's mind, especially from Matthew's gospel, we know he's a very analytical mind. He's a very detail-oriented guy. I imagine that in his mind, he was going through every possible outcome, trying to conceptualize, what does it mean for me to follow Jesus? And we can talk about it now and say, man, that must have been a hard decision. It had to take him so many days and hours. I'm sure Jesus had to ask him every day, hey, Matthew, come follow me. Matthew, come follow me. No, Matthew had to make a decision in an instant from this guy that he'd probably heard about. And he understood that, okay, if I say yes to go follow this man, my reputation is shot. I'm not going to have any money. I'm not going to have any security. And I'm probably going to be pretty uncomfortable. Why would he take that first step? But what do we know about Matthew? He did take that first step. And with his eyes set on Jesus, Matthew was never the same. With his eyes set on Jesus, Matthew became one of the authors one of my favorite gospels in the Bible. With his eyes set on Jesus, Matthew got to experience something that if he doesn't step into the unknown, he never has the opportunity to experience. Don't let the fear of the unknown keep you from taking that step towards Jesus. And that's kind of a hard one, a big one to start with, because the reality is there's a lot of unknown in the world. There's a lot of unknown in our lives. But just like Matthew, we can sit there and analyze all those different opportunities, all those different outcomes, everything that could possibly happen, the good, the bad, the indifferent. We can analyze all those things, but if we let the fear of the unknown control the decisions that we make, we might miss an opportunity, and that opportunity might be stepping out to faith in Jesus. That's number one. Number two, the fear of failure. Moses might be my absolute favorite example of this, because he nearly let the fear of failure keep him from taking that step towards Jesus and ultimately keep him from saving the people of Israel, his people. I actually talked about Moses the last time I was here, and we went through some of the excuses that Moses made. Exodus 4:1, he said this. This is answering God's call. He said, Moses said, "What if they will not believe me? What if they will not listen to what I say?" In verse 10, it says this. Moses said to the Lord, "Please, Lord, I've never been eloquent, neither recently nor in time past, nor since you have spoken to your servant. I am slow of speech and slow of tongue." Listen, Moses was afraid to fail. Moses did not believe that he could get the job done. Moses didn't think he was the person that God was supposed to be calling. But here's what I believe. I don't believe there was any part of Moses that didn't want to free his people. I wholeheartedly believe that regardless of his attitude and his response to Jesus, he absolutely wanted freedom for God's people. But the fear of failure and the feeling of not being able to get the job done nearly kept him from taking that step towards obedience. It's actually interesting. Every time, not just when Dustin calls me, but anytime I've ever gotten the opportunity to guest preach anywhere, my initial reaction when somebody asks me is the exact same. And I go, what? No way. Who would want to listen to me? Who wants to hear from me? I'm kind of an odd dude, okay? People around me that know me know that I'm weird, I'm sarcastic, I make lame jokes. I'm working on my dad joke game. It's not good. I have 3 kids. It should be better. It's not. It's not good. My goal in life is to make my wife laugh with dumb dad jokes. Like a 4% clip at this point. It's not good. Didn't work. Tried. I tried really hard there. Got nothing from her, okay? It's not her fault. It's my jokes. They stink. So every time somebody asks me to guest speak or preach to something. I got to do a youth group a couple weeks ago in a local, in town where we live. And even when they asked me, I'm like, that was my reaction right there. I get so nervous and I'm like, why me? Why do I have to go and do this? Why would I say yes to this? People aren't going to want to listen to me. People aren't going to hear from me. And this has been an ongoing battle since my very first speech class back in college. And I think part of the reason is, yeah, I was nervous for that, but I knew I had to do it for a grade. But I got up in front of that speech class, and it was a 3-minute speech. And I thought I was up there for 14 hours is what it felt like. But for 3 minutes, I sat there in front of my classmates, and I got sweaty, and I turned red, and it looked like I broke out in hives, and it was bad. And it was supposed to be the easiest speech of all time. I had to tell people, like, my name, where I come from, and why I'm excited to do speech class. And I might as well have told people that I don't know how to tie my own shoes, because that's basically all I could get out there. So when people ask me to do these things for the last 15 years, my initial reaction is to seize up and say, "Oh, I don't know if that's for me. Ooh, I don't know if I should do that. Ooh, I don't know if people want to hear that. Ugh, I'm not sure if I'm smart enough." And the fear of failure and the fear of even the fear of the unknown of what might happen if I fail can absolutely cripple my mind into being like missing opportunities that God might have for me. And in those moments, now that I've done it a few times, I have to sit back and say, okay, breathe. Am I going to let this fear of failure, this nervousness that I have about every time somebody asks me to do anything, take over my body and potentially impact the opportunities I have for myself, the opportunities I have to share what this book has to say? Because here's the thing. I have to tell myself when I get up here and I share anything, it's not for me, and it's not necessarily from me. I hope to get up here and find something in the Bible that is speaking to me and be able to relay that to whoever I'm talking to, and I have to make it not about me. So I ask myself, God, am I doing this for me, or am I doing this for you? And when I can answer that question, Lord, I'm doing this for you, then I'm able to alleviate my brain of that silly fear of failure and be able to move forward. Don't let the fear of failure keep you from be willing to take that step off the boat. Fear of unknown, fear of failure. Third one, the fear of reputation. Listen, I don't know about you, but I want people to like me. I think that's common. I think that's normal. Yeah? Yeah, a lot of head nods. I don't hear a lot of people walking around and go, I hope nobody likes me. That's not a thing. People want to be liked. I care about the impressions that I make. I care about the way I treat people. I care about what my kids think about me. I care deeply about that. And that's okay. I think that's normal. But what's not okay is when I start to let those thoughts about what people might think get in the way of what Jesus tells me I am already. Very early in the Bible, Genesis, first book of the Bible, God calls us as his chosen. When he created us in his image, we were set apart for something greater. Our reputation was built in for us before we ever got here. I think of Noah when God asked him to build a giant boat. Can you imagine what he thought when God asked him to build a giant boat? What are people gonna think of me? I would love to be a fly on the ark, listening to the conversations of Noah and his innermost thoughts when he was building a gigantic boat in a place that didn't have a lot of rain or water. Could you imagine if Noah would have let the fear of his reputation and what might have been keep him from building the ark? It's a whole different story. I like to imagine that Noah would have had the New Testament to read and help make his decision easier. In hindsight, would have been nice for him probably. Because in the New Testament, in Galatians, Paul writes this. He says in chapter 1, verse 10, he says, "For am I now seeking the approval of man or of God? Because if I'm trying to please man, I would not be a servant of Christ." That probably would have been an encouraging verse for Noah as he's hammering away at his gigantic boat. Listen, we're not perfect. Noah wasn't perfect. But he made the decision to not let the fear of what his reputation might be keep him from stepping out towards Christ. We all make mistakes. I'm sure we can all think back to times when we were in college, high school, middle school, even beyond that. And there's probably a lot of dumb mistakes here in this room collectively. Most of them mine, but I'm sure there's a few sprinkled out there. Right? Think back to a couple of those decisions that you wish you could do differently. Because when I do it, I find something really fascinating. Basically, I can attribute every dumb decision I've ever made, especially if we're talking like middle school, high school, pretty much every dumb decision I ever made was all about being worried about my reputation with my friends and my classmates. Because I wanted to be liked, I wanted to be cool, I wanted people to approve of me. I remember in high school, one specific instance, I was a new kid at the school. I moved schools when I was a freshman in high school. Long story, didn't like it. But when I finally kind of acclimated to the idea of, okay, I'm at this new school, let's dive in, let's make some friends, I was trying to figure out how I was going to find some friends to run with, find a crowd to run with, figure out who were going to be my people. And so I got in this class where we had these kind of study groups that we would have to study for tests. I couldn't even tell you what class it was for. But I got in this study group of really lazy classmates. They didn't want to do anything. And so I said, because I was like, this is my chance. I'm going to get in with this crowd. I'm going to have friends, and we're going to be kosher. It's going to be straight to graduation. So I said, hey, listen, guys, I'll do all the work. I'll do all of it for the group. I'll do all the prep work, all the notes. I'll get everybody little study cards, and when the test comes along, I'll just, teacher's not looking, I'll just slide it your way. I was like, I'm so in. Dumb idea, first of all. But I was sold that this is how I was going to make friends in my new class. I'm like, I got these sweet little 3x5 cards. You know, the ones that when you have those t-shirts, do you still use 3x5 cards in school? When the teacher's like, you get 1 3x5 front and back to do your notes. And everybody gets the finest tip pencil they can find and writes in the smallest little notes they can. Every single word of the test, because you get one card. Yeah, I can write real small. And I was filling those 3x5 cards up front and back, and I should have been selling those suckers, okay? I was good at them. And I'd make one really good one. I'd get to my photocopy machine in my mom's office. I'd photocopy a couple of them off. I'd get to the test day, and when teacher's not looking, when he's passing out tests to everybody, I'd slide my cards to the rest of my group. I got you. We got caught. Yeah, like first try was not good. Like immediately he was like, hey, like six of you have the exact same answer. That 3x5 card's the same as that 3x5 card. And I was like, ooh, boy. Bad decision, right? We ended up having to all retake the test, and which is fine for me because I did all the work and I studied. I got the same exact grade. But all of that group that I was trying to get in with, that I was trying to help, that I was trying to be friends with, all failed because they hadn't looked at a single thing. And what I was doing to try and build my reputation, because I was afraid of what it might be if I didn't do this, ended up backfiring, and they all hated me. How could you get caught? And it ended up isolating myself further and further than I even could. I let my fear of what my reputation might be keep me from taking the right first step. Instead of stepping out of that boat towards my walk on water moment with Jesus, I stayed in that boat and said, I'm going to do this myself because my fear of my reputation was going to keep me from doing anything the right way. Don't let the fear of what your reputation may or may not be keep you from stepping out of the boat. Because the reality is your reputation's already set. 1 Peter 2:9, it's not going to come up there. This isn't in the note, but 1 Peter 2:9 says you are a chosen people, a royal people, people after God's own heart. Your reputation is set without you ever having to do anything. And all God asks is that we take that first step towards him. And the fear of the unknown, the fear of failure, the fear of our reputation, and the last one, the fear of change. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. Change is terrifying. We like our routines. We like our coffee made a certain way. We like the same people to make our coffee the certain way. And when there's somebody new making our coffee, not doing it the certain way, it ruins our whole day. That kind of rhymed. That slapped. That was good, huh? Yeah, that was good. Front row, really good energy from that one. I should drop that as a single. That's really good. Didn't even mean to do that. But we can go further. It's not just coffee. We like parking in the same places. We like sitting in the same spots in church. Every single Sunday. We like doing things a certain way. How many of you have, whether it's couches, chairs at home, who has a spot on the couch? Yeah. We're like, if other people sit in your spot and you walk in, you're like, okay, this isn't going to work. We know where we sit at the dinner table. We know where we stand in the kitchen when we're working together. If me and Brittany are cooking together, I know where I'm supposed to stand. And if I'm not standing in that spot, it's like I've never been in a kitchen before. We have routines. But here's the thing about having these routines and not being willing to change is when we are not willing to change, and whether it's for fear or other reasons, that fear of change keeps us from stepping towards Jesus. And we risk missing the opportunities that we might never get again. I wonder if Peter never stepped out of that boat, would he have ever had an opportunity like that again? Probably still is a disciple. Probably still one of the most prominent ones. He's a fiery guy. But I wonder if Peter never steps out of that boat, does he ever have a walk on water moment again? I mean, just look at the Gospels. In all four accounts, we read of all these great miracles and teachings from Jesus. People saw, people heard, people experienced everything God had to offer. But here's what's cool about the Gospels. In each of those Gospels, there's a specific group of people who constantly oppose Jesus, who constantly oppose change. The religious leaders, the Pharisees. How is it that the people who know most about the scriptures of old, the people who were absolutely dialed in when it came to the scriptures, the people who could recite the words of Abraham, the words of Moses by heart, how is it that they are so unable to accept any sort of change that they miss Jesus entirely? The people who followed the law to a T, the people who had the answers for every religious question, the people who would have been in the same spot in the temple every time you saw them, the people who would have said the same words, sang the same songs, never would have moved their spot, probably wore the same thing to church every Sunday. How is it that those people, those religious leaders were unable to take a step towards Jesus? Because they knew that stepping towards Jesus would change everything. I remember when I proposed to Brittany, we were preparing for the wedding, and I remember a lot of things, but I remember being excited. I remember feeling like I was super underprepared. I remember looking forward to our future together, which has resulted in now we're, what's today? We're like a couple weeks away from our 11-year anniversary. That's pretty cool. We're going to New York. That's going to be sweet. 11 years, though. Three beautiful children. So many incredible stories. So many fun experiences. I can remember all of them. But you know what I also remember? Is how nervous I was leading up to the wedding. And no, I wasn't nervous that she was going to say no. I was pretty confident that, you know, when she said yes to getting the ring, that I was probably good to go. I was hoping at least. So I wasn't really nervous about Brittany saying no at the altar. That wasn't a thing for me. I wasn't really nervous about the day being perfect. I wasn't really nervous about not being able to get through my vows, which ironically I couldn't get through my vows, not because I couldn't say them, but I literally lost my voice the night before our wedding. And so I was up there like, I promise. She's like, what? And I'm like, I promise it's the real thing. They had like three microphones on me just so you could hear me. I wasn't nervous for any of that. What I was nervous for was the inevitable change. Not that it was bad change, it was good change. Because here's the two options. I could, after we got married, continue to live my life the exact same way from before I met Brittany and even through our dating. Staying up late, making my entire schedule about myself, not worrying about money, spending it on silly things, making plans with the boys and not telling her. Don't recommend. Always talk about it. I could have done all those things, and quite frankly, we'd probably still be here where we're at today, just with some different conversations along the way. But I don't know that we would have had all the same experiences and joy and fun and different things that we've got to do that we talk about today. Because for me, to do my part to make our marriage and my life successful, I had to be willing to step out of what I was used to as a single person, as a single man, and change and learn what it meant to be a married partner. And it was a good change. So many different experiences and memories because I decided to step out and not be the same person that I was. Where in your life are you letting the fear of change cripple you from experiencing everything Jesus has to offer you? As I close today, I want to invite the band back up. Because over the next few weeks of diving into your church health, your personal relationship with Jesus, doing this church health survey, which I think is super cool, you're going to have opportunities to step out. You're going to have opportunities to get out of your comfort zone. You're going to have opportunities to take that step of faith out of the boat and walk towards Jesus. But here's what I understand about those opportunities. We're also going to have a lot of excuses and reasons of why we shouldn't do them. Listen, I don't know what stepping out of the boat looks like for you. But what I do know is that as a church, we can't let the fear of the unknown, the fear of failure, the fear of our reputation, the fear of change, we can't let those be the reasons why we don't step out of the boat. I think in order to dive into having a healthier church, to dive into having a healthier relationship with Jesus, and really figure out where you are, you have to be willing to step out of the boat, because you'll never have that walk on water experience until you do. As I was opening my Bible this morning, just to put my message in it and bring it here. Ironically, it's not the Bible I used to write the message, because I just got a new one. So I didn't have this one next to me while I was writing the message. I was using a different study Bible. But when I opened this one this morning, I opened the passage, wanted to read through it a couple times. And I have an existing note in there, right next to this passage. And all it says is this. I don't know if it was a sermon I listened to or just while I was reading, but it says this. A breakthrough always precedes the miracle. What does a breakthrough look like for you? What's your breakthrough gonna be? What in your life is that tension right now that's causing you to be stuck on the boat? And all you need for that breakthrough to happen, to have your walk on water experience with Jesus, is to take that first step. What's the fear that's holding you from doing that? Listen, life's hard. It's not getting any easier. But I know that together, as a community of people who love Jesus together, we can take this journey one step at a time. What's your breakthrough gonna be? What's the miracle you're looking for? What's it gonna take for you to step out of that boat? Would you pray with me? Lord, thank you so much for who you are. Thank you for even reminding us of these stories, these truths that happened, to remind us that it's okay to be not okay. To remind us that all it takes sometimes is for us to take that first step towards you. To remind us that even when we don't have our eyes fully locked on you, Jesus, you're still there waiting to pick us out of the water. Father, I pray that each person in this room, as they dive into this next season of church health and personal relationship health with Jesus, that each person would look deep within and say, where is somewhere that I can take that first step? Where is somewhere that I can get out of the boat and walk towards Jesus? Father, we love you. We need you. It's in your name we pray this morning. Amen.